Good morning, everyone. You are very welcome to our service, and a very special happy Mother's Day to all the mammies with us today. Welcome to you who are listening during the week on our recordings page, and also to you who are with us via our webcam. My name is Gavin Byrne. So let us begin our weekly gathering of prayer, worship, and companionship with words from J. Krishnamurti. Rain on dry land is an extraordinary thing, is it not? It washes the leaves clean, the earth is refreshed. And I think we ought to wash our minds completely clean as the trees are washed by the rain, because they are so heavily laden with the dust of many centuries, the dust of what we call knowledge and experience. If you and I would cleanse the mind every day, free it of yesterday's reminiscences, each one of us would then have a fresh mind, a mind capable of dealing with the many problems of existence. And now we will light our chalice, symbol of our free Unitarian faith. Let there be joy in our coming together this morning. Let there be truth heard in the words we speak and the songs we will sing. Let there be help and healing for our disharmony and our despair. Let there be silence for the voice within us and beyond us. And let there be joy in our coming together. Let us draw into our minds and hearts those who are now living through violence and fear throughout the Middle East. We pray and beseech those whose minds are set on destruction to seek peace through dialogue and understanding. Now, before we sing our first hymn, I would like to acknowledge a gift to this community from Jasur. It's this stone plaque on which are carved the words, "Let peace be our path and love our guide." This stone carved from Afghanistan earth is offered in friendship to the Dublin Unitarian Church. So thank you, Jasur, and your family. We are blessed to have you in our community. So let us sing now hymn number 410, Surprised by Joy. So with your hymn books in hand, let us read together the words that express all that brings us together as a loving Unitarian community, and it's number 471 in our hymn book. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve human need, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine. This do we covenant with each other and with God. Now, our first reading this morning will be read by Jennifer.
Morning, everyone. Hardly bears repeating, but the world is full of undignified fires, as Michael Blumenthal calls them, and it can make us feel very helpless. And as I contemplated helplessness and read poetry, which from an anthology called Life-Saving Poems, and truly, they are life-saving poems. This is one of them by American poet Michael Blumenthal. And I think when we feel helpless, like a lot of us feel this moment, what can we do to make the world a better place? There is one thing we can do. This is Be Kind by Michael Blumenthal. Not merely because Henry James said there were but four rules of life. Be kind, be kind, be kind, be kind. But because it's good for the soul. And what's more, for others. It may be that kindness is our best audition for a worthier world. And despite the vagueness and uncertainty of its recompense, a bird may yet wander into a bush before our very houses. Gratitude may not manifest itself in deeds entirely equal to our own. Still, there's weather arriving from every direction. The feasts of famine and feasts of plenty may yet prove to be one. So why not allow the little sacrificial squinches and squigulas to prevail? Why not inundate that particular world with minute particulars? Dust is certainly all our fate. So why not make it the happiest dust possible, a detritus of blessedness? Surely the hedgehog, furling and unfurling into its spiked little ball, knows something that with gentle touch and unthreatening tone can inure to our benefit. Surely the wicked witches of our childhood have died, and from where they are buried, a great kindness has eclipsed their misdeeds. Yes, of course, in the end, so much comes down to privilege and its various penumbras. But too much of our unruly animus has already been wasted on reprisals. Too much of the unblessed air is filled with smoke from undignified fires. Oh, friends, take whatever kindness you can find and be profligate in its expenditure. It will not drain your limited resources, I assure you. It will not leave you vulnerable and unfurled with only your sweet little claws to defend yourselves and your wet little noses and your eyes to the ground and your little feet. Thank you.
So our story this morning is a welcome return of Nasruddin. You remember Nasruddin, the famous Persian with the donkey. And this is The Perfect Woman, is the name of the story. And it's from Bill Darlison's book, The Shortest Distance, 101 Stories from the World's Spiritual Traditions. Nasruddin met an old friend whom he had not seen for 20 years. They sat down together in the cafe and talked over old times. "Did you ever get married, Nasruddin?" asked the friend. "No, I'm afraid I didn't." "Why not?" "I've been married many years and I've never regretted it." "Well," said Nasruddin, "I was always looking for the perfect woman. I wanted my wife to be beautiful, intelligent, and sensible." "And you never found her?" "Well, I thought I had when I was 20. Her name was Abla. She was beautiful, just the kind of woman I like. But I'm afraid she wasn't very intelligent and her language was atrocious. I was embarrassed to be with her. She certainly wasn't the perfect woman." "Was she your only girlfriend?" "No, when I was 25, I met a woman called Bahira. She was good-looking and intelligent, but she wasn't very sensible. She spent all my money on frivolous things, and she couldn't even boil an egg. She wasn't the perfect woman either." "Were there any more?" "Well, only one. At 30, I met Hadaya, and she was truly a gift from God. She was the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen and the most intelligent. What's more, she was prudent and sensible, a good cook, and a brilliant conversationalist." "She sounds like the perfect woman you were looking for." She was the perfect woman I was looking for. Then why didn't you marry her? Unfortunately, she was looking for the perfect man. Amen. So let us sing hymn number 76, For Flowers That Bloom About Our Feet. So my reading is by John Haynes Holmes, and it appears in this book, The Unitarian Life, Voices from the Past and the Present. When I am asked if I believe in God, I am either impatient or amused and frequently decline to reply. All I know, all I want to know, is that I have found in my relationships with my fellow men and women and in my glad beholding of the universe a reality of truth, goodness, and beauty, and that I am trying to make my life as best I can a dedication to this reality. When I am in a thinking mood, I try to be rigorously rational and thus not to go one step further in my thoughts and language than my reason can take me. I then become uncertain as to whether I or anyone can assert much about God and fall back content into the mood of Job. When, however, in preaching or in prayer, in some high moment of inner communion, or a profound experience with life among my fellows, I feel the pulse of emotion suddenly beating in my heart, that I am lifted up as though upon some sweeping tide that is more than the sluggish current of my days. I find it easier to speak as the poets speak and cry, as so many of them cry to God. But when I say God, it is poetry, not theology. Nothing that any theologian ever wrote about God has helped me much, but everything that poets have written about flowers and birds and skies and seas and the saviors of the race and God, whosoever he or she may be, has at one time or another reached my soul. More and more as I grow older, I live in the lovely thought of these seers and prophets. The theologians gather dust upon the shelves of my library, but the poets are stained with my fingers and blotted with my tears. I never seem so near truth as when I care not what I think or believe, but only with these masters of inner vision would live forever. John Haynes Holmes. For our reflection this morning, I've adapted some words from Ashley Horan, and it's entitled, How Is It With Your Soul? And our moments of quiet will be brought to an end by the choir singing Abundant Life. How is it with your soul? This is the question that John Wesley, Anglican priest and the founder of Methodism, was known to ask of participants in small reflection groups. I ask you because for some, this has been a hard week. So, friends, how is it with your soul? If your response to that question is anything like mine, I want to invite you to pause as you hear this. today, together, we take deep breaths. We may say a prayer, we may sing some songs. We light our chalice and hopefully feel the force of gravity pulling us toward the same center. All of this helps us feel more rooted and less alone. And let us make this part of our practice, part of our regular lives. And once you feel that rootedness and that connection, hear this. You are loved beyond belief. You are enough. You are precious. Your work and your life matter, and you are not alone. You are part of a we, a great cloud of witnesses, living and dead, who have insisted that this beautiful broken world of ours is a blessing worthy of both deep gratitude and fierce protection. Our ancestors and our descendants are beckoning us, compelling us onward toward greater connection, greater compassion, greater commitment to one another and to the earth. And together, we are resilient and resourceful enough to say yes to that call, to make it our life's work in 1,000 different ways, knowing that we can do no other than bind ourselves together more tightly and throw ourselves into the holy work of showing up again and again, to be part of building that world of which we dream, but which we have not yet seen. On Laetare Sunday, traditionally a Christian community would pause in their Lenten austerity. Laetare means rejoice, and it's inspired by just one verse from Isaiah 66. Laetare Jerusalem, rejoice Jerusalem. For the author of this passage, it is an invitation for those who love God to rejoice in the future restoration of Jerusalem, turning past mourning into joy. It promises comfort and shalom, peace from God, envisioning a renewed future that will bring prosperity and comfort to all of God's people. And today, after many generations, it's interpreted by both Jewish and Christian people as a metaphor for the joyful future of freedom and salvation. The celebration of Laetare Sunday is a tradition dating from the very early Christian church. In the old Roman Catholic tradition, weddings were not allowed during Lent, but were permitted on this day. And of course, it is Mother's Day also. And in those olden days, it was the day when children working away from home were released to go home and visit their mammies. So again, happy Mother's Day to you all. This is Lent, and it is also Ramadan. And for many, it is a time of austerity. That austerity is designed to ground us in what truly matters. And Christians are offered this day to pause that austerity over these 40 days. But our Muslim sisters and brothers probably do it better because they pause their austerity every day at sunset. And us Unitarians, we can also learn from these rituals and practices and pause as often as we need and recognize the value of joy in the midst of whatever it is that tries to diminish or lessen or prevent us from joyful moments. Of course, austerity today is a reference to strict economic measures designed to reduce costs. It's when governments implement strict economic policies to reduce public debt, typically involving significant cuts to public spending, to welfare and services. And during periods of austerity, citizens are burdened with increased taxes, and more often than not, periods of austerity affect the vulnerable the most. But religious austerity, that is a feature of most of the world's religions. Religious austerity in Buddhism, in Christianity, and Hinduism involves self-discipline and denial, all for the purpose of spiritual growth. And practices, as you know, include fasting, meditation, renouncing worldly pleasures to achieve some kind of enlightenment or closeness to God. But its purpose really is to promote a simplicity of life. In the very early Christian church, a movement of asceticism grew. Now, this movement was led by what were called the Desert Fathers, who took literally the gospel commandment to sell all you have and follow me. And then in Luke's gospel, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all of your possessions. So the Desert Fathers were men who sold everything and headed away into the desert to spend the rest of their days dedicated to solitary prayer and fasting in order to achieve a closeness or a binding to God. And that binding, that is the root of the word religious. Now they in turn, as you know, an organized movement of monastic life, which thrived, of course, in Ireland. We think of the monks of Skellig Michael, St. Kevin in Glendalough, Clanmacnoise, and Bridget's nuns in Kildare. Now, the reformers in the 16th century rejected the notion of special communities dedicated to religious life and sought to bring religious ideals into everyday. Enter the Puritans, the ancestors of this very congregation. They focused on austerity as a core virtue in itself, not as a particular vocation of the hermit or the nun or the monk. Of course, Unitarians don't do Lent or austerity as our Catholic or our Muslim sisters and brothers do Lent or Ramadan. Lent, of course, is remarkably similar to Ramadan, and this year it happens together. Ramadan is primarily inspired by the divine revelation of the Quran to the Prophet Muhammad. It commemorates the month in which the Quran was revealed. And like Lent, it is a month of austerity. But I invite you to consider Laetare Sunday for us as our midweek break for joy, a pause, if you will, from fear or worry about the undone, the yet to be completed. Let us use this time, this hour, for celebrating all that gives us joy in our lives. But when is joy absent? I believe it is when there is fear. Both are powerful, often interconnected emotional states that shape human experience and perspective. They are both teachers, for good or for ill. While fear can be protective, but often a limiting response to potential danger, joy is an infectious, hopeful state, often representing or promoting freedom. Fear and joy are perhaps two sides of the same coin, but joy being the best antidote to fear. And fear, as we know, can make all kinds of behavior and attitudes seem reasonable. And I think fear is one of the greatest issues facing our society today. We turn against those who do not look like us or act like us because we fear that their presence will somehow dilute or reduce our power, our wealth, and our culture. And what do with that fear? We make it harder and harder for diversity to thrive. I think we might try and see what it means to move away from protecting our ideas and notions about ourselves to protecting people and the planet which is gifted to us, where all may have life, life to its fullest, an abundant life. There is diversity without which we would be a poor manifestation of creation. And those creation myths in Genesis tell the story of how the heavens and the earth came to be, and it includes everything. We know that our earth is about 4 billion years old, and it took remarkably longer than the 6 days to create. All we can truly know for sure is that it is. We are. As Cathal Courtney says, we have been cast upon the earth together at this particular moment in time with a fundamental need to find the hope that might sustain our lives. Ashley Horan, when she asks, "How is it with your soul?" she says that our ancestors and our descendants are beckoning us, compelling us onward toward greater connection, greater compassion, greater commitment to one another and to the earth. That's the holy work of showing up and the holy work of finding joy. Today, our Christian neighbors will have as the gospel reading a passage from Luke's gospel, and that it will be read in countless churches throughout the world. Give, and there will be gifts for you, a full measure pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be poured into your lap. because the amount you measure out is the amount you will be given back. Giving, it seems, is one of the pathways to joy. And here's what this brings to my mind. I get a particular joy in gift giving. I love watching the faces of those I've just given a gift to. Now, the process before handing over can be stressful, all that shopping. The, oh God, what do I get him for his birthday? Because very often we think, what can I possibly give to someone who has everything? Or here's another one, she's very hard to buy for. But it's a simple and joyful pleasure to give. Now, this is particularly important for me this month because three of my nearest and dearest are celebrating their birthdays, and one of them has a significant birthday. So pray for me. Of course, gifts are mostly not things at all, but your time, your presence, a helping hand, or an encouraging couple of words. Do you find joy in giving? Giving demands putting aside your ego, yourself, and spending time thinking about the other. That's essentially what's involved in gifting. It's the process of abandoning yourself, if only for a few moments, and thinking of another. So in your experience, is what is written in Luke's passage true for you? That the amount you measure out is the amount you will be given back. Two weeks ago, I offered some ideas about spirituality. Spirituality is to examine, shape, and care for your life and the life around you. And we do this in order to achieve more wholeness, satisfaction, depth, and meaning. So as you examine, shape, and care for your life, you are engaging in a spiritual practice. We look within to care without. We love within to love without. We treat within to treat without. We gift within to gift without. This is what I think Jesus was saying in that passage. And giving will give joy. But do remember, one might receive with joy also. We can develop in ourselves a continuous relationship between a religious or spiritual experience and all other experiences. We don't necessarily need to find the quiet or sacred space, whether mountaintop or church sanctuary, to find spirituality. Our spiritual lives grow through a whole series of precious moments. Those moments when we experience serenity or hope, strength, love, even fear and loss. Our experience of living, sometimes challenging, sometimes filled with grief, but also nourished by moments of joy, they all contribute to enabling us cope with the ordinary demands of life. But only if we mark all of those moments, we sanctify them and allow them to teach us. So on this Laetare Sunday, let us take our midweek break for joy. Let us pause the fear, the worry, the undone, the yet to be completed, and use this time for celebrating all that gives us joy in our lives. The Psalms tell us that weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. Instill in us the desire to search for joy, the intention to find it, and the courage to live it out loud. Let us celebrate the joy of gifting, the giving of ourselves to others, particularly when they need our love and presence the most. Amen. Now let us sing hymn number 151, I Wish I Knew How, after which we will have the collection. Our notices. Thank you everyone who contributed to today's service. A special thanks to the choir. Please everyone join us downstairs for tea and coffee. Pam leads our weekly service of reflection here in the church on Wednesdays at lunchtime, and you can access these sessions on our webcam. So it's going to be a very busy couple of weeks ahead. So grab your diaries for these. Of course, if you sign up for our e-newsletter, they will arrive in your inbox from Josh every week. Here goes. Our sister church in Dunmurry is celebrating its 350th anniversary, and there are a number of events there over the coming months. So we've been asked to bring this to your attention. The first event is a talk entitled Presbyterianism Finds Its Feet Towards the End of the 17th Century. So it's on Thursday, the 19th of March at 7:30 in Dunmurry, but it also will be live streamed on their Facebook page. It's a beautiful chapel, meeting house church in Dunmurry. It's well worth a visit at some stage. My ordination and installation service is on next Saturday, the 21st of March at 2 p.m. here in the church. All are welcome and expected to be here. This is quite a milestone for this congregation, and it's really about this beautiful congregation, that event. Refreshments will be served downstairs after the service. And we are inviting those of you among us to bring cakes or pastries if you can. Chocolate is particularly welcome. So anything with chocolate, I'd be very happy. The next Heart and Soul Contemplative Gathering will be on Monday, the 23rd of March, here at 7:30. It's in the vestry. Please reserve your place with Shari. The Unitarian Walkers will return to Skerries on the 28th of March, where Frank Tracy will lead the group, meeting at 10:30 for coffee in Skerries Mill. More details from Marcus. The next Sundays at 2 concert will be on March the 29th, featuring music for guitar, violin and cello. And as always, please get your free ticket on eventbrite.ie and just search for Unitarian and you'll find the concert. Voluntary donations on the day are welcome. We are planning to hold a service of prayer, spoken word and music at 5 p.m. on Good Friday, and it's entitled A Gathering for Justice. It will focus on our commitment to social justice across cultures and borders. So Good Friday at 5 p.m. Our congregational AGM will be on Sunday the 26th of April at 12. There will be vacancies for membership, or maybe just a vacancy for membership of the Managing Committee. So if you are interested in joining the Managing Committee, you can talk to any member of the committee who will tell you what's involved. There are just 11 meetings per year, 9 of which are on Zoom. Now, before we finish, Madeline has a shameless plug for you.
Indeed, this is probably about the 8th or 10th shameless plug, because a lot of you have been very good and have come to our plays. I'm in an amateur group out in Bray. It's actually not as far as it sounds. Just after Easter, from the 14th to the 18th of April, they're doing Juno and the Paycock, which I guarantee these two people who are Juno and the Paycock are excellent, so it'll be a good show. I'll put this up out in the hall and you can get the details from there. Thank you.
Okay, our final hymn this morning is hymn number 29, Joyful, Joyful. May we go forth from this place thankful for the life that sustains and renews us. May we be open in the week ahead to the grace that surrounds and surprises us. May we seek moments of joy and gift all of those we meet with our goodness and presence. Amen.